Hello, it's Monday, April 20th, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier in Tel Aviv. Don't miss a single episode, sign up with your email, just follow the link in the comments below. One says it will not attend talks with the United States in Islamabad. Has President Trump underestimated Tehran's resolve? I'll be discussing that with Zineb Ribua from the Hudson Institute. Hear our conversation in a moment. First, though, the headlines. The US Vice President J.D. Vance, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner are set to travel to Pakistan today for talks with Iran. But Tehran says it will not attend, citing the seizure of one of its tankers by the US Navy in the Gulf of Oman. Iran responded to the taking of the Tuska with a drone attack on American warships. It's called it an act of piracy and has vowed revenge. The price of oil shot up more than 6% on the news. In Lebanon, the IDF is warning civilians not to return to villages near the border. Israeli forces are systematically clearing border towns to enforce the new yellow line buffer zone. The IDF says it's removing Hezbollah-linked infrastructure to prevent militants from re-establishing a presence. The defense minister, Israel Katz, says the goal is to remove the threat once and for all. Separately, Israel's foreign minister, Gideon Saar, has condemned as shameful footage which shows an IDF soldier destroying a statue of Jesus in Lebanon. In Gaza, after outright refusing to disarm, Hamas is now offering half measures. It says it's willing to hand over rifles and handguns to an international body, but not its core arsenal, which includes rockets and anti-tank systems. Israel and the United States have already rejected the proposal, calling it insufficient. Analysts say Hamas is buying time, betting that a wider war with Iran would shift pressure away from Gaza. In the UK, security services say a wave of attacks targeting Jewish sites is part of a coordinated campaign linked to Iran. A little-known group, Harakat Hashab al-Yamin Aslamiyah, has claimed multiple incidents, including arson attacks on synagogues. Two teenagers have been arrested over the latest attempt on a synagogue in North London. Officials believe the goal is clear, to show Tehran can export instability beyond the region. Well, as the Hormuz crisis deepens, a new energy reality is taking shape. Analysts say the world has now used up the last oil shipments that left the Gulf before the blockade. From this point on, supply depends on new routes, and increasingly, those routes run through Turkey. A long-stalled pipeline from Iraq to the port of Ceyhan is ramping up, while Ankara fast-tracks a major overland corridor linking Iraq to Europe. It means Turkey could gain significant leverage over European energy for years to come. And finally, a diplomatic push beyond the region. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he hopes more Latin American countries like Costa Rica, Paraguay and Uruguay will join a growing front against Iran. The push comes as Argentina's President Javier Milei prepares to become the first foreign leader to take part in Israel's Independence Day torchlighting ceremony. The Isaac Accords, as they're known, go beyond symbolism and include joint efforts with the US to disrupt Hezbollah-linked financial networks across South America. Before we get to today's conversation, a quick thank you to our sponsors. Amy and Jonathan Ayres made today's episode possible. Now here's my conversation with Zineb Ribua from the Hudson Institute. So, Zineb, it looks like Iran will not attend the talks in Pakistan. Has President Trump underestimated Tehran's resolve?
No, I think it's the other way around. I think that the IRGC basically spent every single card it had. They tried to really put the market on fire by hitting oil facilities in Gulf countries. They also tried to do a blockade in the Strait of Hormuz. But the problem is that each time what they faced was not just the retaliation of the United States, but also of their own partners. I mean, China is also one of the biggest losers in what Iran is doing in the Strait. And so I think what they are doing is that they are trying to buy time. And this is very, I think, a pattern in their behavior. Whenever they feel like they're being cornered, they still try to buy time, to just drag on negotiations. What they don't understand, it seems like, is that they're not facing the same administration. They're not facing a Biden administration. They're not facing a Barack Obama administration that would give them time. because this administration, what it's doing is that on top of negotiating, it's also applying huge amount of military pressure. Most importantly, as the negotiations are ongoing, there is also the weakness of the command and control of the IRGC itself. While it's true that they have this mosaic architecture, mosaic strategy, and that they're dispersed across several provinces, I think they've been extremely weakened.
What about reports of a split in the leadership between the more hardliners and, I hate to call them that, but the more moderate elements within the regime who want to negotiate?
Yeah, I think you're right in saying you hate to call them that, because I don't think that there is a moderate position here. I think that they're all hardliners. They all want to save the Islamic Republic, but each one has another way of proceeding. And I think that some of them do want to speak to the United States, but some of them don't. But at the end of the day, they want the same goals. They want still a revolutionary republic. But what is important to highlight is that there's a discoordinated IRGC. And one can see that in President Pezeshkian's remarks and then Ghalibzadeh's remarks and others, how they are intersecting and how they are going against each other. It tells us more about their own organization and about the way it is proceeding, which is that it's weakening, that there isn't really a center of command, and so on. And I think it's a political problem that they'll have to solve. Also, it's important, I think, to highlight that Trump created a succession problem for them. I mean, attacking the Ayatollah and then replacing him by his son, it's a violation of their own revolution that came against dynasty and monarchical succession. And therefore, they are trapped in this cycle where they don't know who is the real representative of the republic. It's also a problem in the eyes of the militias as well. I've been really paying attention to some Iraqis, and then because the Iraqis are suffering from this parallel system that the Iranians have built, and they can see that it's a real problem.
You've written about how this marriage of third worldism and Islamism is a growing catastrophe for Western society. Where does the Iran war fit into that thesis?
If one looks at the Islamic Republic revolution, really its origins, but also some of its demands and ambitions, it came as a revolution for global struggle against the West and against also the countries that have collaborated with the West. The Islamic Republic sells itself as a revolutionary project in the Middle East. And what has been, I think, interesting for me is that, you know, third worldism is part of this huge literature that is really part of the Marxist analysis of global power and imperialism. But what is interesting about third worldism is that it sees American imperialism, but also Israeli power linked together, and that they operate together. And that's exactly a little bit the same, I think, cosmology of the Islamic Republic. They see the United States as the great Satan and Israel as a little Satan. And even more so that they believe in this idea of global struggle against the dominant capitalists. Obviously, the Islamic Republic does not express itself that way, but its supporters do. And it has been very interesting to see across Europe, but also in the United States, and to some extent less so in actually in the Arab world, just the same language being used against colonialism, against surrogate power, etc. And all of these things come from like a very specific tradition, which is third worldism. It's been very noticeable how Israel, especially after October 7th, being part of this huge fixation, that everything is happening because of Israel, and not because of Iran, which has militias across the Middle East and Africa, which actually depletes treasuries in Iraq and Syria so that it benefits its own project. But this justification is actually made through third worldist language.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Do sign up with your email and receive these updates daily. Goodbye.